Welcome to That Medic Podcast, your bi-weekly dose
of all things digital health, global health, and leadership.
My name is Success, a student at Cambridge University.
And I am Simmer, a student at Harvard University.
Join us as we chat with some top professionals in healthcare. Enjoy.
Hey guys, welcome back to That Medic Podcast. Today, I am joined by Dr. Jason Millard, the CEO and co-founder of StartCodon, a health tech accelerator that supports innovative startups with funding, facilities, and extensive coaching. Previously, he was CEO of Cambridge Epigenetics, and following on from his success there, Jason partnered with his soon-to-be co-founder, Dan Rook, and set up StartCodon, with the aim of finding disruptive new health tech innovations and growing those companies. Jason graduated summa cum laude with a BSc in molecular biology and chemistry from Tulane University, and was awarded a Marshall Scholarship to obtain his PhD in medicine from Cambridge, with a focus on the molecular mechanisms regulating vascular remodeling within coronary artery bypass grafts. Jason has also previously worked as a business development manager for Horizon Discovery's diagnostics division, and has served as an associate for Cambridge Enterprise, the tech transfer office of the University of Cambridge. I hope you guys enjoy the episode. So Jason, first question, as a kind of tradition on the podcast, we do ask our guests why medicine or why medicine related business. So yeah, in your specific case, what kind of drew you to the life sciences field?
You know, it's interesting because ever since I was young, I knew I wanted to be a scientist. I'm very fortunate that my father was a geneticist and a professor at a historically black university back home called Southern University.
Huge.
Go Jaguars.
Huge. So
I grew up going to his lab, you know, playing with Drosophila, hanging around, looking down microscopes, doing experiments at home. Science was always my number one subject at school because I loved it. You know, if you're young and inquisitive and have an imagination, science is everything. And on the flip side, my mother is a social worker by training, but an entrepreneur. So she really instilled in us not only a generosity of spirit and a real strong lean towards social justice and caring for others, but also that entrepreneurial drive. Because although she was a, I would say, social worker by day, she was an entrepreneur by night. So she had several side hustles, and she would always get me to go along with her, whether it was when she was selling cosmetics for Mary Kay and became the district director for the Southeast, or when she had her diabetes clinic, where she was shipping in early days before Amazon Prime was even a blip in anyone's eye. My mom and her colleague set up a diabetes clinic, well, a pharmacy really, shipping supplies to historically marginalized communities around Louisiana who could not get access to a pharmacy. So these are glucose monitors, test strips, insulin, you name it. So she was really trying to address those unmet needs. So from her kind of leanings, as well as my dad being that academic scientist, here I am.
Wow. What an introduction to, I guess, medicine and the life sciences and entry from a young age. First of all, the age at which you were playing with Drosophila, I didn't know what Drosophila was until I came to the university. I mean, like I forget like Lego and stuff, right? You're playing with the big toys from a young age. No, that's really, really impressive. And I guess it's not really then a surprise that you've gone on to do all the incredible things that you have done. I guess based on what your parents did and from your upbringing, that's incredible. So just for the listeners who don't know quite how incredible you are, would you mind going through a little bit of your resume, kind of stuff you've done or you've achieved, all that kind of jazz?
Sure. And I'm going to start with a caveat by saying that I'm not incredible. I'm just somebody who's had a lot of support and opportunity. So if anybody's listening to this and thinking, oh my gosh, I wish I could. Well, you can. Everything I'm about to tell you, you can do it too. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
That's right.
Let's set the ground rules right there. But I am the proud son of Caribbean immigrants and grew up in the deep south in Louisiana. I went to my university, Tulane, and double majored in molecular biology and chemistry. Because why have one major when you can have two? Double down on that science. And I really caught the bug for research because I was able to work in the gene therapy center for 4 years. And I also got to work on the side in an organic chemistry lab, you know, in my off time, because I love being busy and overstretching myself. It's a theme. You'll feel that. Yeah. But it really instilled in me that deep understanding of what science was really about. And it shifted me from wanting to be a medic and go to medical school towards wanting to be an academic researcher. So I was fortunate to be awarded a Marshall Scholarship.
Fortunate.
Allowed me to come to the UK. And I barely left home at that point. So my passport, you know, got on a flight to this very cold and wet country that was completely alien to me.
Yeah, my condolences.
Right? Listen. I landed in October. I was like, what is going on?
That's so rough.
You know, exactly. Like I was not prepared. I didn't know what a duvet was.
No. How did you survive?
I slept in my wool coat. Someone was like, get a wool coat.
What is wrong with me? Big.
So I remember going to Burlington Coat Factory with my mom. We got this wool coat. It was like, I was swimming in it. It was two sizes too big. I was laying in my bed in my little, flat, wrapped up at night, shivering. My flatmate at the time was like, oh, you know, we don't turn on the heater because it's too expensive. So here I am, cold, shivering, and it was just a mess. But again, I was diving into my PhD. There were some really wonderful people. You know, shout out to Kathy and Susie who were in the, there were two of the executive assistants in my lab. And they were like, we're going to hook you up. They gave me an electric blanket. They told me about duvets, took me to Argos. They're like, we are going to fix your life.
Duvets, Argos, you're really living the life, huh?
Listen. So while going through that trauma, I was trying to complete my PhD, which is part-time in Cambridge in cardiovascular medicine.
Yep.
And part-time at the NIH in the States. So I was one of the early, they call them Oxcam scholars. So got to spend a couple of years in Cambridge, a couple of years in the States. Came back to finish up, met my now husband, then partner, and decided two things. Number one, I don't want to be an academic, but I love science. So what am I going to do with that? Number two, I'm in love and I'm going to stay in the UK, even though I'm cold and adjusting to the weather.
The things
I'm
you do for love.
There's a lot of is that just love? And then number three, I would say actually, is there is so much opportunity here. Yeah. So kind of fast tracking. Imagine I'm here. I have my PhD by the grace of the Lord above. I graduated. My PhD was a mess. A confused ADHD mess. I was like, please, I know what I'm talking about. Believe me.
I promise it's not waffle. I promise I'm actually good at this.
At one point, my advisor was like, why are you still writing? And I'm like, I don't know. I can't stop. I just keep waffling on.
Yeah, it happens.
Exactly. The examiner was like, okay, you're here. We get it. You're good. And I thought, great. But now what do I want to do? Mm. My amazing PhD supervisor here, Kathy Shanahan, was and still is one of my biggest supporters and a dear, dear friend.
Shout out, Kathy.
Shout out, Kathy. I'm giving a lot of shout outs today.
Yes, sir.
And what she did for me, she was like, Jason, I know that you don't want to be an academic. So what is it that you want to do? I'll support you. So she supported me to enter a business plan competition with a couple of friends. Dope. We won that competition.
Dope.
Yes. We had a company, Be Stable, and we won the Lion's Den competition at King's College, London.
What was that? What did that kind of involve, if you don't mind me asking?
Also, we had to come up with an idea. It was my two friends who were physiotherapists, Massimo and Jeroen, and they had an idea for a shoe that would prevent falls in the elderly, so give you more stability, hence Be Stable. And we had to come up with a business plan and pitch and go to classes. And I was like, oh, I'm definitely an entrepreneur, just like my mom. This is exactly. Maybe the sciences.
Do like, my mama proud.
I'm telling you, I got that bug, you know? And then I did an internship as well, where it was one day a week in the tech transfer office at King's College. So that allowed me to learn what it meant to spin out, to out-license, to manage intellectual property. So those were two seminal moments in my life, all because I had a PhD supervisor who supported me, and it opened the doors for my subsequent career.
Wow.
That and then is from there. It's people are made. They don't just pop up out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, I agree.
The sum of our experiences and the people who supported us.
Preach.
Right? Wow. So this, I'm going to press that real quick. Off of the back of that, moved to Cambridge, worked at a consultancy called Innovia, developing fast-moving goods, then moved to tech transfer. That internship I had before helped open a door to get into tech transfer. Then my tech transfer colleagues helped me get a job at Horizon Discovery and Cambridge Epigenetics to spin out because they were like, oh, we know Jason. We know he can deliver. There's a great opportunity for you, Jason. Let me introduce you.
Yeah, yes. And then you landed in Cambridge Epigenetics, where you did an unbelievable job by all accounts. So talk me through your time in Cambridge Epigenetics, because you kind of you really worked your way up to the big CEO. So yeah, talk me through that whole process.
Yeah, so I came in as employee number three.
Mm-hmm.
And when my former boss, Ian Thomas, who's also a dear friend of mine, shout out to Ian, he was and still is the head of life sciences at Cambridge Enterprise. Mm. And I was a junior associate on his team. And I remember him sitting down with me and saying, you know, Jason, you've got to go out and get some biotech experience if you want to get to the next level. And I went, okay. So then I left and he said, I didn't mean now. But you told me to go get some biotech experience. So I'm going off and get some experience. He's like, I didn't mean like immediately. Like 3 or 5 years. And I'm like, well, you should have said that.
You should have been specific, right? Come on.
Be specific. Listeners, be specific.
Facts.
So he introduced me to Shankar and Shankar's co-founder, Bobby,
yep.
Who is a hoot. Bobby comes from a Oxford engineering background. I know that other place.
The other place, yeah.
You know, nobody's perfect. I'm not going to hold it against them. But he doesn't come from a life science background. So you've got Shankar, who revolutionized next-gen sequencing. You've got Bobby, who comes from, he was a chief strategy officer for Vodafone. He's now chief strategy officer for Microsoft. Like, he comes from a totally different world. And the two of them together were creating this truly groundbreaking company looking at genetics before anybody really knew what it was all about. So I said, I'm in. It was me and two others, Toby and Christine. They were doing the bench work, and I basically had to sort out everything else. Who are we going to market to? Selling products? What's going on with the website? You know, who's going to be helping pitch for fundraising? All of it.
Wow. And so I had a
crash test from being employee number three to being promoted over the years to finally getting that call to be CEO, leading a couple of our fundraisers, and growing a team. It was an incredible experience.
Damn, you really went through a trial by fire type of learning method. No, that's incredible, because as well, like you kind of get to integrate all this knowledge and understanding from so many different like things that you had to do being number three in the company, like everything from marketing to the IP, to the website, to the actual science. And you kind of, I guess all that knowledge kind of coalesced to kind of make you the person you are today, and has led you to do all the other stuff that you've kind of gotten into, like StarCodon, which we'll discuss in a bit. I find incredible. One big thing in medicine that I always talk about is multidisciplinary teams. So you've got the doctors, you've got the nurse, you've got the pharmacist, the occupational therapist, all these kind of guys with all different skill sets kind of come together, and you get the best of all worlds, and then that helps you to most appropriately manage a patient. And I guess in the same way, you kind of see a business in a somewhat similar light, right? You've got yourself from your background, and Shankar, and this guy from the other place. I'm not going to talk about too much. You guys all brought your different knowledge. You made something that is truly, truly incredible. For our listeners, those of you who don't know what Cambridge Epigenetics is, I mean, Jason, you can probably go into a bit more detail than I can, but you basically you discovered or developed an epigenetic biomarker discovery platform. If I'm not incorrect for the development of
100% correct.
Yeah, diagnostic assays and like identifying new drug targets, which is like mind blowing, right? Because as you said, nobody was doing epigenetics at the time, and then you guys were like the first.
Yeah, well, you know, so incredible. let me lean into that success. It wasn't so much that nobody was doing it; it's that nobody really knew that it mattered. It was so niche. I can tell you, going out and talking to people, I had two crowds. I had the ones who were like, oh, I'm an old school epigeneticist. I know everybody in this space. There's like 10 of us. We go to all the conferences together. We all know each other. We're best friends. Best friends. We go on holiday together, and it's all good. And nobody else really understands what we're about, but we love it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I can rock with this as long as you invite me to the parties. Right? And then you have the other people who are like, epigenetics. I'm barely understanding what genetics is about. What's this epigenetic stuff? So we spent a lot of time educating the market. I still remember in the early days going and visiting the likes of some of these big liquid biopsy players, et cetera, who hadn't even touched epigenetics before, and really evangelizing to them. So I'd like to say that Cambridge Epigenetics was the bridge between the niche players making epigenetics become a mainstream topic and field. We were really there at the epicenter. And the kind
of, you guys are really like apostles of the word.
Exactly. And it's great to be in that space, because you know, you want people to come along on that journey with you. And a lot of groundbreaking businesses, it's an educational play. You've got to educate the market to create the market.
Wow, you got to educate the market to create the market. That's going in my diary. No, that is amazing. And I guess moving on, just the natural progression of your story, right? You eventually ended up leaving Cambridge Epigenetics to start your own thing, right? With your co-founder, Dan Rook, Start Codon. So I guess, first of all, for our listeners, could you briefly talk us through what Start Codon is? What the name Start Codon kind of came from, what's the idea of it? And what you guys kind of do.
Happy to. So it was a very much a coalition of the willing. Let's say that the different stakeholders in the Cambridge ecosystem who really wanted to make sure that not only our locale thrives, but that we could leverage the best resources that Cambridge has to offer in biotech and democratize it so that others across the UK could get access. Those were the two things that really appealed to me. Making sure that we had an organization that would close the gap between early stage accelerator programs, where you kind of get business 101 and an initial inkling of your idea, and what venture capital investors want to see. There was a gap in between, particularly in the healthcare and biotech space, that we decided there was a need for Start Codon to fill. So taking the people with those early stage ideas, really holding their hands and giving them guidance and support, and investment to get the killer proof of concept studies done, your business plan sorted out, build your team so that you can then pitch to the seed plus investors who are looking for an investable prospect. Mm. That's where we fit. So bringing together Cambridge Innovation Capital, which is the VC arm of the university, plus Roche and Genentech as a pharma player, Jonathan Milner as a successful entrepreneur and investor himself, business angel, and then also the Baberham Research Campus, where companies grow and thrive. You have all the elements coming together and saying, okay, we need a team who are going to take the best of us and turn it into a program to support young entrepreneurs. Mm. That's where Start Codon, the idea came from. I met my co-founder, Dan. We're like yin and yang. It's fantastic. He's a lawyer by training. I'm this mad scientist, crazy ideas guy, like, you know, flying above the forest. And he's the one who knows.
Head in the clouds.
Head in the clouds, like, woo, look at that new idea. And he's like, okay. Let's focus. How are we going to get this done? What's our plan? And I'm like, he's like, bring me back down to earth. And I'm trying to get him to fly. And it's perfect. Yeah. And then we built a team, to your point earlier, an amazing team around us, all from different backgrounds and different skill sets. Diversity matters. We'll get to that in a second.
Facts.
Because we want to exemplify that we are a very diverse team, investing in diverse founders and trying to do diverse things. And that is so important. Now, Start Codon. I'll give you a brief intro. For those who don't know their molecular biology, this is a quick lesson on how proteins are translated. Brace yourselves. Grab your seats. So the Start Codon is the three-letter code that kicks off translation from RNA into protein. So if you think about the classic dogma, we have our genome. From our genome, RNA is transcribed. And a certain type of RNA, messenger RNA, is translated into protein. And then the proteins have certain functions. RNA does as well, but we won't get into those details. Now, what's nice is that the vast majority of messenger RNAs begin with the same start codon. So you end up with the same amino acid, methionine. And then everything that comes after are different amino acids depending on what the protein may do. So it might be a protein to help you with your vision. It could be a protein that helps your cardiomyocytes and your heart function. Or it could be a protein that's secreted by your immune cells. The vast majority of them are all starting in the same way and start with the same amino acid. So Start Codon, we believe that you can start with us, regardless of if you're a therapeutic or a diagnostic or a digital health play, whatever it is, you can get a solid start with us to start something amazing. And then we will, in a bespoke fashion, help you with those building blocks to customize the journey and experience for you.
Wow. Yeah. So when I first, I obviously specifically asked you this question because I wanted you to give the answer. Because when I first heard it, I was like, oh, that is clever. That is clever. Whatever the company goes down to do in the, you know, along the line, regardless what it is, at the end of the day, they all came up from this one Start Codon, and from this one company. And I guess, and that's incredible. And I guess your kind of, mentality, your dogma is kind of is shown in your portfolio, right? Because you guys have got a really, really wide range of companies that are kind of, you know, you're managing, right? So I've got here from stuff like epigenetics and genomics to cardiac tech and cancer therapy and all this kind of stuff. And it's really, really, really exciting. And I guess for me, that was the kind of thing that got me into quote unquote venture capital as a first start. I don't claim to be really in the space at all, but as in my interest is the fact that you just got all this really weird and wacky and wonderful things from all over the scientific landscape. And the common goal is, you know, for the benefit of people, right? And bringing it to the business and helping people. And that's what the big thing is for me. So I guess for you, my question that I wanted to ask you is, with all the healthcare and life science research that you've seen so far, what kind of things do you think are most interesting? And what do you think have the most benefit clinically and the most potential to improve clinical care?
That is a tricky question. So I'm going to answer it in hopefully a clearer way without offending anyone listening, thinking he didn't mention me. So what I'm going to say is that I really like platform plays. Now, depending on which investor you speak to, some like platforms, some prefer assets, some kind of go back and forth. But I'm very much in the camp of technology platform that is really data driven. So what we're now these days calling tech bio in some circles, but I think data driven is a way forward. But you have to have really great inputs. So we have to balance out that the data is being analyzed by these increasingly sophisticated algorithms, machine learning and AI and otherwise, but it has to be informed still by biological understanding, chemistry, and even physical properties, and really good quality data. So when I think about what's most likely to translate into the clinic, are things that are understanding what the unmet need is, making sure that there's deep, rich data that can then be analyzed by the algorithms to come up with effective solutions, whether they be therapeutic or diagnostic or even productivity tools. A lot of impact that we see, there's low-hanging fruit for just improving processes that are inefficient today or allowing people to get access to information or better utilize existing solutions. It doesn't always have to be brand new. That's another thing that I'm focused on. So for example, I'm mentoring a couple of students who have an idea about increasing the throughput in the hospital by making it easier to let's say, write up your electronic health record notes or spot trends for repeat patients who come in again and again. And instead of treating them like it's the first time you've seen them, how can you better do longitudinal analysis of individual patients to empower them to get the best treatment they need? That is not a brand new drug that's taken 15 years to get to the market. It is not a diagnostic test that went through preclinical discovery with 5,000 patients. It is literally improving a process that is translating into the clinic and delivering outcomes today via a really clever platform and data. So as long as I understand that unmet need, that there's data, the platform, and you really understand how you're going to execute, I'm in favor. That cuts across every sector, every field of research you can imagine. It doesn't matter if it's genomics, small molecule discovery, biologics, cell therapy, diagnostics, you name it, medical devices. That's my North Star.
Yeah. And actually, just very quickly to piggyback off that point, I think what I've kind of come across based on what I've done in the space and just my research is that the most important thing to have is like you said, it's a problem, right? Because there are tons of really, really clever, really, really intelligent people out there who have got, you know, 50 PhDs and know everything there is to ever know about a specific protein, right? And they've got this amazing tech, but then they've got nothing to apply it to, right? And so then there is that there's the distinction between tech looking for a problem and then the problem that's looking for a particular solution, right? So I think that is the best way to kind of go about, you know, innovating, right? So like you said, identify a problem and then you work your way around it rather than spending 20 years coming up with this really, really obscure tech and then figuring out a problem to fit around it. Just my two cents.
I agree with you. I think that too often people have a hammer and they're looking for nails. Facts. And they convince you that, you know, my best analogy is exactly that. I've got this shiny hammer and it's golden and it's new and it means I'm special. Oh yeah, don't ignore those other hammers. No. This one's really made out of adamantium.
Trust me, this is the best hammer.
It's the best hammer you've ever seen. It's got AI enablement, like it's a hammer, and you've got a nail. And it's like, no, but I've got a screw. Do you have a screwdriver? No, I said you have a nail and you need my special.
Listen to the words coming out of my mouth. Okay.
Exactly. Listen to me. I'm being specific. I just told you that's a nail. They're like, no, it's really a screw. I mean, can't you see that I need a screwdriver? Stop trying to force this hammer product you've developed. That's not what I need.
Mm.
I think in the academic world, and this is no ding on academia because I've come from that world, the incentives are around publication and novelty. True. And proving to people is new. It's never been done before. The number of times somebody comes and pitches to me, I don't know if you hear the same, but they pitch to me and they try to convince me it's never been done. And then I sit there and I Google and I'm like, what about these five people? And they go, oh, I didn't know about them. And I think, you know.
Well, you should.
You should have. Like, come to me and say, I understand an unmet need better than anybody. I've interviewed the patients, the payer providers, the support networks, their families, you name it. I've trawled through the literature and patents. I really understand what the competitors are doing. I show them respect. I'm not just going to say I get all the green tick boxes and they get all the red X's. I'm going to say, you know what? Here's what they do well. Here's what I think they don't do well. Here's a reason why this has been tried before, but it wasn't successful. And now I've solved and addressed those challenges. Mm. I am not the first or the only to get into this space. I'm just going to be the best. And here's how. That's the pitch I want to hear.
Mm. Preach. Yeah, I guess for all you future startup creators out there listening to the podcast, I guess that's the vibe you need to go for. That is incredible. But I guess if I were to ask you about a specific field of science then that you think is most applicable to, you know, healthcare and all that kind of stuff, a specific field, what would you say? Just out of scientific interest. I'm just curious, really.
So, you know, obviously I gotta say, genomics and epigenomics is
facts.
My heart. You know, I don't want to pick my children and pick my favorites, but I have to say that it touches on so many different fields.
Yeah.
And there's so much more information to be uncovered. It really fascinates me because every year, just when you think it's safe to sleep at night, boom, another discovery is made. Did you know that X happens? Or did you know that Y? Or I had no idea this enzyme could do this. I was looking at an opportunity just the other day.
Mm.
And they discovered that a certain type of RNA that normally is only in the cytoplasm can go into the nucleus and cause double-strand breaks to be produced because it's involved in the DNA repair pathway. And it blew my mind. I said, really? There's another person who's looking at, well, transcriptomics, I think, fits into this as well with RNA. I think it's very fascinating.
Yeah.
And I put the two together because there are so many things that RNAs do that we are only now beginning to understand, not just catalysis and binding, but so many different applications. Look at what's happening with the circular RNA revolution with Moderna and others.
Yeah.
It's opening so many doors. And just leaning into the RNA bit, there's a professor in Cambridge who has looked not only at RNA, but also at what she calls moonlight proteins.
Ooh.
That's the third thing that fascinates me. And her analysis has shown that there are proteins that do X in one context and Y in another, depending on where they are in the cell. So we have these dogmatic views that this protein is a receptor, this protein is a cytokine, this protein is a transcription factor. There's some transcription factors that are moonlighting just something totally different, like scaffolding proteins. It's like, what are you doing? Get back in your box. Right? That is not for you.
What's wrong?
Wrong. I learned in my textbook that this is what you do. Like actin in the nucleus. I remember when I was doing my PhD, actin is a cytoskeletal protein. And some people have found actin in the nucleus and they said, that doesn't make sense. It's in the cytoplasm because it's a cytoskeleton protein. That's what it does.
That's all it does.
That's it. Stop talking to me.
Stop showing me more than you are.
Thank you. Exactly. Be humble. Sit down.
Ooh. Nice. Right? Kendrick, we like that.
And then Acton was like, oh no, I'm booting up. Look, I'm in the nucleus too. And I do something totally different.
So, kind of a commentary in your own life, actually. I just
oh, true. Don't sleep on me.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And honestly, yeah, this is the kind of stuff that's so exciting about academia. You will read just something in your textbooks. Like, I mean, first 3 years in Cambridge here is all about the science and stuff. And you hear that, this the KATP channel does this. And, you know, this tyrosine kinase structure does this and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, just I've never heard of protein moonlighting. And it just that kind of makes sense, right? It's just efficient. That kind of just doesn't make sense. That's awesome. I'm actually just going to look into that after this is all over. but back to the podcast. A couple more questions for you. First, I guess just working in health tech and in med tech and in biotech and all the stuff that you've done, what would you say are some of the unique challenges that you faced? And what do you think are some of the most important skills that you've developed or skills that you possess that have helped you to kind of get through these challenges?
So I think first and foremost, mindset is so important. Having a growth mindset, I think, is everything, not just in our field, but across fields. And a lot of people I find have fixed mindsets. They're afraid of failure. They're always looking at the negative. They are focused on the problem, but they never come up with a solution. And I encounter that a lot in the early days. People who, in their own fixed mindset, want to kind of hold you back. They say that they're doing it to be realistic, but I think a lot of people are being pessimistic and they are only focused on what could go wrong as opposed to how to make it right. I think that that causes them to just say, oh, it's just too big of a problem. I can't play a part in it. I can't do anything. I'm just staying in my lane. I had to overcome that in others and even in myself when I was younger, when I learned to step into my own truth, into my own capabilities, build my self-confidence and really say, you know what? I'm going to do it. I don't care. Like there was a book I read when I was younger called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And I recommend it to everybody. Short read. You could read it in a commute to work. And it teaches you to say, okay, yes, all these things could go wrong, but guess what? What's the worst that could happen? Yeah, it's not that bad, is it? All right. Now do it.
Feel your fear and do it anyway.
Feel the fear and do it anyway. And this is a philosophy that tracks through my entire career. So it took a lot for me to go through to get to that point where I was no longer afraid to just go for it. And understanding that I didn't have to be all things to all people. It takes a team. It takes a village. Finding people who could, you know, close the gaps that I have in my own skill set or balanced well with me or were pulling in the same direction as opposed to pulling against me. And being sure that you, let's say, move the people to a side who are not there for you, because not everyone is there for you. That's a valuable lesson.
Agree.
Wow. Second thing I would say is, obviously, I tick a lot of boxes when it comes to diversity, but I've never thought of them as holding me back. They might have presented some challenges, but I think it's a superpower. The fact that I am, you know, being Black, being openly gay, coming from an immigrant family, moving overseas, having my ADHD brain being what it is. These are all things that anybody could say are somehow, you know, liabilities or even disabilities. And I say, no, they are my superpowers. They have taught me to be resilient and learn how to hustle. They have, in some cases, closed doors, but they've opened doors as well. And being able to lean into who I am and leverage those experiences to allow me to help others is just the greatest joy of my life. Because not only is it morally the right thing to do to be fighting for justice and diversity, I call myself a Jedi. Learned that from my friend in the States, because DEI is boring. So if any of you are listening and you want to do something, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion, Jedi, that's a good term. Adopt that term, because it shows that we have the power to make changes around us. And when we're in positions of influence, we should use it to not only hold open the door, but to just blast it off its hinges so that we have a different world that we're moving into. And I think that's the other thing that I've learned is all these experiences, I don't look at myself ever as a victim. I think of myself as a victor. I've overcome, I've learned, and there are plenty of people who've had it more challenging than me. And I'm here to help just ease the journey and give them the support they need.
Wow. Yeah, wow, powerful. Very, very, very powerful. Jason, honestly, so one of the things underappreciated about you, you've got these really incredible phrases that you throw around. Coalition of the willing, you've got to educate the market to create the market. The Jedi, I mean, as a very, very minor aside to all the amazing things you do, very, very cool. But yeah,
I'm full of marketing bumps. I always laugh whenever I'm talking, like, I'm going to give you an acronym, TEAM. Together, everyone achieves more. You know why I get this from? I get it from my mom, who's like, my original life coach. It all comes back to my mom. I mean, Celia Malat, she's going to be listening to this, I tell you.
She's going to listen to this. Hi, Jason's mom.
Listen, say hi.
Hi.
She's going to listen to this. She's going to share it on LinkedIn and Facebook. And then she will send me notes about how I could have given better answers. Because she's that kind of person. I love her for it.
Oh, that's amazing. You're from a mama's voice. Same here, honestly. My mama's my role model. She got me into science as well. It just happens, man. It happens. It really just happened. I guess this does bring me to the end of the questions I had to ask you, Jason. First of all, thank you for coming on. You have been an unbelievably amazing conversationalist. The stuff that you've achieved, have you accomplished, and the stuff that I know that you're going to go on to achieve are incredible, and I cannot wait to continue kind of following your story. I'm a big fan. In case you couldn't tell, I'm a big fan. big fan. I guess, have you got any other piece of advice, any other tidbits to pass on to the listeners? Anything any other canned phrases you want to end off
with? let me reason to my acronym book. I'll say thank you so much for having me on, and you know, success. I'm a huge fan of yours, especially now, because you are doing exactly what we all should be doing, is creating platforms, getting the message out there, and hopefully inspiring listeners to go out there and be great themselves. Honestly, like, you know, you're doing incredible work. If I had one take-home message to give to people, it would be that you can do it too. You just have to get started and not be afraid of failing. In fact, I like to say, if you're not failing at something, you're not trying hard enough, you're not stretching yourself. So go out there, learn, just get started. And you don't have to do it alone. In fact, you shouldn't do it alone. Find people who are going to support you and work with you and be grateful for that support. But just go for it. And do not think that anybody you're listening to or you see out in these streets has something that you don't have. If you say, oh, what do they have that I don't? The answer is nothing. You can do it too.
Damn straight. You can do it too. Jason, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. God bless. And I hope you go on to incredible, incredible things. I know you will.
Cheers, mate. And likewise. And thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
And that is the episode. Thank you guys so, so much for listening. Please remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a positive review if you enjoyed. Also, head to the description to follow us on all social media so that you never miss an update.